the Drown Rat Studios. You're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast, coming to you from everywhere and nowhere. Tipping the scales of justice with untold stories of American families. And now, Justice Speaks Up.
Justice Speaks Up is not a standard format podcast. You are listening to unscripted phone interviews for the purpose of documenting an ongoing open source human rights investigation into federally funded child abduction via collaboration between the U.S. Family Court and Child Protective Services. This often includes constructive parent and child estrangement on behalf of these agencies. This project is tracking the untold stories of U.S. families and conducting statistical research on behalf of this civil society in order to create solutions to a very important branch of the U.S. justice system that is statistically failing families and children. It's violating due process, violating constitutional violations, domestic terrorism, unlawful intimidation and surveillance of U.S. citizens. It's also conducting violations of the Violence Against Women Act by refusing to acknowledge the crimes committed against them in family court and in CPS custody cases. They're falsifying information in a federal, not all the time, but sometimes it's rare when it happens, but they're falsifying information in federal individual education programs for special needs children, forcibly medicating minors. Lying and falsification of evidence is often at play. They're often violating American Disabilities Act, human rights violations, and due to these failures, they are contributing to U.S. poverty levels, homelessness, mental health dilemmas, addiction, and all of these are a detriment to the entrepreneur and small business community by crushing many of these parents who own and many now are not operating startups. If you know any families that have been that may meet the criteria for this study, please have them email their participation request via the contact form on our website at justicespeaksup.us. Justice Speaks Up is also seeking to interview candidates who are running for government office, and we would love to discuss any areas in regards to their platform for reforming these entities and advocating for children and their families. In turn, we are also seeking anyone currently in these political seats to reach out to Justice Speaks Up via the same contact form to offer your input into this research study and to lend insight into for your constituents so that they can get answers. They've been left in the dark for many decades seeking answers to the areas that we are researching. Justice Speaks Up is conducting this research as a means to create a peaceful, long-lasting solution between U.S. families and these entities because we identify this as a U.S. crisis. I am requesting that listeners use their best judgment and not allow children under 18 to be present when you listen to these interviews.
Wouldn't that be equivalent to the sanctions that came down on you?
In my opinion, yes.
So the whole reason we're bringing this up is because I'm trying to impress upon people that the family courts need reform and they are no longer acting in the best interest of the children. They're acting as a complete different entity. And it's a little disarming, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you bring up the best interest of the children, because I can tell you, you know, that the family court, everything they do is fake, but this is like the number one thing when it comes to children in a court. They always rely on the best interest of the child. And what I have found is that 99% of the people don't even realize that the doctrine to the best interest of the child doesn't even exist. This is a false belief, right?
Oh, do expand on that.
Huh?
Tell us a little bit more about that. Explain a little bit more about what you mean by that. It doesn't exist.
So, they say the best interest of the child. So, you try to look up, and there is absolutely no doctrine that states child? Should the child live with an abusive parent that is rich and can afford good schooling? Should they live with a poor parent that is the authentic parent and loves them? There's nothing that says what the best interest of the child. This is a false, they try to get you into a false belief and using that against you.
You know, Mitchell, moving forward, we're going to start referencing on air a lot of the documents that we've used to put all of this together, which we've been asked to withhold, and so we can kind of get green lighted and start moving forward a little bit more vigorously. So with that said, I'd like to quote and read the best interest definition from a document provided in 2016 by childwelfare.gov. And which is the Child Welfare Information Gateway through the Children's Bureau of Washington, D.C., also a part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And we will be putting the link up again in the blog where all of you can have access to this. And just to give you a brief little definition of what this document is that I'm referencing, according to the website, it says this fact sheet discusses state laws that present the factors that courts need to consider when making decisions about a child's appropriate custody and care. Factors to be considered include parental capacity to provide adequate care, sibling and other family relationships, and the child's wishes. And I'm going to tell you right now, the children are the last people being heard, okay? The fact sheet also addresses the definition of best interest and guiding principles of best interest determinations. Summary of laws for all the states and U.S. territories are included. So guess what, parents? Doesn't matter what state you're in. Here you go. Right out of the gate, the second page of this document, the very first paragraph, states the best interest definition, and it states, although there is no standard definition of best interest of the child, the term generally refers to the deliberation that courts undertake when deciding what type of services, actions, and orders will be best to serve a child, as well as who is suited to take care of a child. Quote unquote, best interest determinations are generally made by considering a number of factors related to the child's circumstances and the parent and or caregiver circumstances and capacity to parent with the child's ultimate safety and well-being the paramount concern. Now, how does that relate to your situation? Again, it's not in the child's best interest to financially impoverish parents. So the reason I'm going over this so in depth with you in particular, Mitchell, is because of the distress you've had from the deterioration of your children and many of the parents who have so much confusion. And I wanted to expand on what you said, that it's really kind of a misnomer. It's this big, it doesn't exist. But there are documents from the Department of Child Welfare that It is here, okay, because these courtrooms don't run on fallacies, okay? Now, they may not be running on hard evidence and hearsay, oh, well, kind of, which is a fallacy. But what we're exposing is their vulnerabilities and their lack of referencing documents such as this and getting off track and no longer following the guidelines from our own government entities who have been funded taxpayer funded research to define what is in a child's best welfare when undergoing and being the focus of a child custody case, okay? And so to expand on what you said, there's simply five bullet points here, okay, under the paragraph, page 2, second column, first paragraph. It says approximately 22 states and the District of Columbia list in their statutes specific factors for courts to consider in making determinations regarding the best interest of the child. While the factors vary considerably from state to state, some factors commonly include 1, the emotional ties and family relationships between the child and his or her parents, siblings, family, household members, and other caregivers, 15 states and the District of Columbia. Now pay attention to the number because I have something to say after I'm done with these bullet points. The capacity of the parents to provide a safe home and adequate food, clothing, and medical care. Safe home, meaning the home they've always lived in. Stable. Stability. 3, the mental and physical health needs of the child. 9 states and the District of Columbia chimed in on that one. 4, the mental and physical health of the parents. 9 states and the District of Columbia participated in that. Lastly, the presence of domestic violence in the home. 9 states. Now, quickly, the biggest question that I'm sure you're even asking yourself, with 50 states, how is it that our governmental entity for child welfare allowed this report to even go out without all 50 states chiming in? And furthermore, if we're going to question why our family courts are in the state that they are, it's because they're not mandated to chime in on documents like this. To me, if I was the project manager for this research project, I would call this a shoddy job. And I would tell them, no, this project is not done until all the states chime in and we have a full consensus. So when we start to wonder why, when we appeal issues or we go up the ladder and we're not getting any feedback and nobody cares, keep in mind about this document that the Department of Child Welfare, okay, again, this is through the Children's Bureau, childwelfare.gov, okay, even they did not get all the states to chime in. Doesn't that bother you, Mitchell?
That does. That just, what that does is just leaves an open door for corruption so that the judge can just do whatever they want and just call it the best interest of the child.
In other words, this is why when we are walking into family courts, it's running like the Wild West. And furthermore, it is not a state. The well-being of children should be a federal matter, law of the land across the books, because well-being of a child is well-being of a child, and a child from California should not be treated better than a child from New York or a child who's from a state who did not chime in on this should not be treated lesser than the states who cared enough to chime in on this research project. Do you see where we're starting to have a problem here?
Very well said, Archer. And I agree with you 100%.
This is the research that was needed to do this. And there is no one entity breaking down this research and finding these loopholes because we have a bunch of egomaniacs who are seeing the opportunity to make a lot of money, and their own interests have taken precedent over the well-being of the children, and this document itself exposes it. When I found this document, I could not believe that they would even have the audacity, a government entity would have the audacity to publish something that did not go across all 50 states. This right here shows that our own childwelfare.gov entity, okay, didn't care. They were perfectly fine to have just a handful of states.
That's because they were probably happy to get those few states.
Well, okay, but if you think about it, it's like always leaving the back door open, Okay. So when you compare this, okay, to the business model that we've already broke down, this is how I equate it. You're the little kid who went in and you stole 10 Jolly Ranchers, okay? And you stole 10 Jolly Ranchers and you know you're busted, but damn it to hell, green apple Jolly Ranchers are just so damn good, right? And maybe you got a couple watermelon ones. You're like, well, you know, I really like the green apple ones, so I'll just cop to stealing the watermelon ones and I'll give those up, right? Without knowing that somebody says, I fully know that you stole 10, right? But you try to create an out. So when you compare this document to the fact that each state is using the adoption incentives and the Social Security 4D entitlement funds, and they are making approximately $107,000 per child, it kind of would make sense if you are making a lot of money that when this paperwork shows up at your executive director and says, hey guys, Department of Child Welfare, we're doing a consensus. And they're like, ooh, ouch. Well, you know, maybe if we just don't participate in that, you know, we won't have to be on the radar. It's like they kind of just tried to bow out, right, and stay off the radar. That's the way it kind of feels. What do you think?
Yeah, that's basically what they do to me in court. They just kind of, they don't say anything, then they can't be held accountable is basically how they view it.
Now, here's my concern, okay? I have a copy of the 2018 presidential budget, okay? And I always use New York as an example. New York was receiving $550 million a year to run the Department of Social Services, okay? And it has now been cut by $200 million, and it's now receiving $350 million for that state alone, okay? This is not good. It might be great looking on a numbers, okay, because we're like, oh, hey, look, we're going to be pulling that money in and we're going to be taking that fat out of there, okay? But what you're really doing is you've just put more children at risk because, well, it's like a person who collects cans to pay rent, right? So if that person knows their rent is $1,000 every month and they know that they need to go get 10 pounds of cans to compensate their income to make rent, you know, and then it increases to 1,500. Well, they know that they now need to go get 15 pounds of cans to compensate, right? And so my fear is that this budget cut without properly reforming CPS is going to motivate each state to go after more children.
Yeah, so I recently watched a video on YouTube of the like director of CPS, and he was saying they're basically allocated, I forget the number that he gave, but let just for layman's terms, let's just use 100,000. So their CPS is given by the government $100,000 per year, but if they only use 80,000, then the following year they will only get 80,000. So what they do is if they have official cases where it brings them up to 80,000, they'll go out and they'll just steal children from perfectly good parents in order to meet their quota so that they will receive the full loan, the full grant amount.
Oh, yes, darling. We have a video that we have yet to put out. But where, again, these CPS workers, you know, they're going on camera in the dark, but they're talking clearly about how they would just do drive-bys. And, you know, they want the really adoptable kids. So when they would see, like, really happy, healthy, fun kids out in the yard playing, they'd go up and say, hey, excuse me, your children are unattended in your yard. And what do most people say? It's in the yard. The kids can play. Now, there's a whole movement around free-range parenting, okay? And just follow me here, because you and I both have early childhood educational background. Now, let me qualify myself so you and I can speak as equals. Many people don't know. I put myself through film school by having a in-home childcare license, and I went through 6 months of training for early childhood education, and I also sat for 3 years as a award-winning parent counsel for Early Head Start. Now, with all of that said, what is the one thing that we learn about the 0 to 3 age bracket, Mitchell? That, how do you instill confidence and independence in a child that you can actually do damage to a child by overparenting? Meaning, let the child wander a few feet from you, let them get independence from you, right? And let them then have the ability to come back to you. There is a pattern forming as the incentive program has gone up and the adoption rates have gone up, okay? Parents have had a instilled fear in them to even let their children do normal every, okay? That just generations ago, my generation, your generation, Mitchell, when we were kids, we could go ride a bike to 7-Eleven without CPS showing up on the doorstep saying, why is this child unattended, okay? And because, and those are some of the best childhood memories, right? Getting up Saturday morning, going and getting your friends, and maybe, you know, mom and dad give you $5 and you would just go the whole day, right? And you go get a pack of Hubba Bubba and a big gulp, right? And you were off and running. And so there's a pattern forming here that we have the rise in social media, children now harboring themselves in the home. CPS is avid to get children. Montgomery County, Maryland just took, not that long ago, as a matter of fact, last year, took two children away because an older brother, who, by the way, is old enough by law, 12 years or older, to legally babysit and watch a child in the home, had his younger sister. They walked 3 blocks from their home to the park. Some random neighbor decided that these children were wandering the streets without parents. Here's this random call crap again. And the CPS was called. And the children were picked up at the park and whatever happened. But lo and behold, because a child of legal age walked the park with his little sister, these children now have lost their family. Okay? Do you see something wrong here that is counterintuitive to what the colleges are teaching as far as early childhood education and the correlations between everything? Everything. It's all out of sync, Mitchell. Nothing's making sense here. This whole process is completely off track.
It's completely fake, and they come up with these just most bizarre allegations, and they are destroying families for no reason. These are children that are in perfectly good homes with loving mothers, with loving fathers, and they're stealing them and then selling them on Craigslist. I found CPS basically selling children on Craigslist, and they were offering whoever took a child, that they get like $1,500 to $2,500 per month. So they're selling all these kids to anybody who needs a job, which is ridiculous, to take children from perfectly good, loving homes and just selling them to anybody.
Well, yeah. And so when we started trying to overcome the media blackout, and literally this originally started out with, hey, guys, we have compiled evidence, and hey, media, take this and run with it. We couldn't get anybody to take it because there's a government title on it. And so they have this huge budget to fund this project and to promote their services. And so the radio ads that are purchased, I mean, we were forced to go independent. That's what I'm saying. We were forced because, you know, they got, you know, advertising for foster parents everywhere. Okay. And again, I'm not knocking that because I'm not anti-foster home. I'm pro-reform. What I am saying is that there needs to be a place because let's face it, there are children being born to drug addicted mothers who can't, and even those mothers should have the right to rehab themselves. Okay. Just because because guess what? Life. When people are walking into family court, my friend, they are being punished for living life, okay? And they're not being told they're bad parents. Many people are losing their kids because they didn't react to life perfectly, okay? They fell by the wayside, alcoholism, drug rehab. But again, let's do that family court, criminal court, analysis, okay? If you walk into criminal court, okay, and you stole a car or you robbed a bank or whatever happened, you beat your wife and you're in there on criminal charges and you get up there, I believe in anybody, again, anytime I'm wrong, please call me out. JusticeSpeaksUp.us. Contact me, send me an email. I will personally correct that. But I believe you have in a criminal court up to 3 times, depending on what charges, okay, as long as they're not violent, up to 3 times you can go into rehab. And, you know, so if the criminal court is that lenient against addiction, why are parents who go and complete, when they have their kids, they're like, hey, okay, so, you know, you're on drugs, you have 6 months to clean up. The parents are cleaning up, and they're still not giving the kids back. Because and then what's worse is they're bringing up like addiction charges or like a DUI when kids are like 17, 18, like a decade before they even realized they were going to be parents and they're taking the kids. This is so out of whack. And so that's what I'm trying to pull up is that it's so obscure. You dig up so deep. And as far as I'm concerned, okay, unless you can show me a perfect person, and you and I both know that damn person don't exist, okay? So what should only be relevant in a court of law is that which pertains to the time frame of that child. Meaning, if your child was born August 1st, 2010, anything before that doesn't matter. Unless you're a rapist, a terrorist, a criminal, you've murdered somebody. I mean, there's a serious issue with, like, you know, you're a homicidal maniac, okay? And you've committed murder. Now, those are some violent crimes. Okay, there might be an issue there. But again, you're still a parent, and constitutionally, you still have access to your child. So at that point, it's not that you've been constitutionally ruled out that you shouldn't have access to the child, because that would be unconstitutional. What the court of law is supposed to be doing in family court is deciding what parent is the best parent based on evidence. And the problem is they're throwing out the evidence and relying on hearsay, including provided by their own court officers. Social workers are lying and falsifying evidence because, again, the whole court process is off track and it is racketeering. And so it is therefore not functioning to act for the best interest of children or small business or the stability of American families. It's acting to allow itself to flourish as a business. And to me, this is the equivalent of, I don't know, the Rockefellers coming in and eating up the mom and pop bank, just a small little regional bank. Do you know what I mean? It's big business killing little business.
Yes.
Am I right or am I wrong here?
I view it as absolutely right. What has happened in my case is a perfect example. I mean, I am like a trained professional teacher. I'm excellent with children. I was the main caretaker. They have come up with zero. There was no drugs, no alcohol, you know, nothing, no violence, no threats. They come up with fake allegations against me. The last trial, I asked Judge, I want to hear in your own words, why am I not with my children? He wouldn't even answer me. He can't even give me an answer. I mean, this is pathetic. I feel like saying, please, come up with at least some false allegations so I can have something to argue about. How do I argue when there's nothing there? How do I say, well, no, I didn't do that. I can't even say that. It's like ridiculous. And I've been cut down to 1%. 1% custody. I don't even have overnights. It's like, this is like, and it's been like this for years now. I've had 1% custody for years. And it has made us strange. It has made me and my children strangers when we actually had a closer bond because I was the main caretaker. And I was, you know, the better parent because the mother, she was not involved at all. I would tell her, look, take time off. Come and hang out with us at school. Because I knew, like, the first 5 years are the children's, you know, that's when their brain grows the most. So I made sure I was there and in that development. And I tried to get her to come. Look, because once they get older, it's kind of hard to be with them at school. Once you get past third grade, it's kind of hard to be with them. But in the earlier years, preschool and you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, man, be with your children as much as you can. I tried to get her to take, you know, I said, let's just take off like one day a month. And so what I established was I started my own business so I could be with them whenever. So they had to go to the doctor, you know, they had to go to the dentist.
Oh, but you and I both know that they like to play both sides of the fence. So on one hand, they'll sit there and tell you, oh, well, you know, you're a small business owner. You're not employed. You're financially unstable, but you have all the time in the world for the kids. And then if you have, if it's the other way and you're employed and you have lesser time, well, then you're employed and you don't have time for the kids. What it is they're going to throw as much at the wall as they can. There's no set rules here, okay? And the only thing I can see that is consistent is the corruption that they are performing and the due process violations that are taking place in order to sever people from their children and financially crush them. It's the only thing consistent because, except the fact that people are suffering, Mitchell, and children are being deteriorated daily.
Yeah, so what they're doing is they're manufacturing future criminals. Because what this does is it makes the child so angry. It turns them evil inside because they're so mad and their feelings are just suppressed. So what's happening is once they get older, you know, this comes out in a rage, you know, a ball of rage, and things are happening. They're committing suicide, and you know, later on down the road, the judge is all, oh, you know, we didn't do anything. But yet they manufactured it, and they know they're doing it.
But listen, okay, we know the answer of why this is happening. We spoke of it just a little while ago, okay? I said, what's worse than permanent death is that which dies inside of us while we're still living, okay? And whether people want to accept it and swallow it for what it is, the truth is, when you are parentally alienated from your parent, they died to you, okay? And that child has grieved a loss of a parent. And where the resentment comes in, just like the anger, frustration, rage, and everything that and all of the anxiety and everything the parent's feeling because that child is estranged, not dead, in the back of their mind, because if this is what I'm trying to say, if the full-grown adults who have the emotional, mature capacity to try and hold themselves together and make sense of it are struggling, you're ripping the minds apart of these children. And they don't have that intellectual capacity to reason out and go, I understand I'm just separated. I understand they're not dead. It feels like I'm grieving death, but I know that he's over there. And the children don't have this rationale. And what happens is they just experience the loss, the death. And in the back of their mind, because they lack that, it turns into resentment. And this is what you're talking about. When you plant that seed of resentment and it comes all out, okay, because they feel abandoned by that parent, and there's no way.
Not only that is they think it's their fault, and this is the main reason why they're committing suicide, because they, when they're no longer with that parent, they think to themselves, well, what did I do to that, for that parent not to be with me? And so this is a thing that I have learned. You need to explain to your children that it is not your fault.
Absolutely, because again, if you just, and this is where, you know, if we're going to talk about budget cuts, okay, and we're going to take $200,000 from the New York State, okay, and drop them from $550 million to, you know, $350 million, okay, then you need to look at the contradictions in the research. So the government funded this project, this research project that we just cited, okay? But on the other hand, we also have government-funded research, or taxpayer-funded, government-funded, whatever, projects showing that, and of course, everybody gets in a big rage about this whenever you hear a baby's been dropped off on a pastor's doorstep, okay? And you talk about those children that were abandoned, the dumpster babies, and, you know, and the truly unwanted children who do need to go into be adopted and need a loving home, but the damage there. So we have studies that show what that psychologically does to these children as adults, okay? But yet, our family courts are perfectly fine to walk in and do this to these children, knowing there was an alternative way. And that is the effects of racketeering on these families. That is the damage to these families who are clearly victims of crime of racketeering. Yes, Mitchell?
I fully agree, Archer.
I mean, we broke this down. I mean, I know we held off on doing this, and it's a two-hour special, but there's a crap load of back noise where I'm at, and I apologize, but we're a little over 2 hours, but I think it's worth it, don't you? I mean, because I think this really needed to be said. There are a lot of parents who have questions and are not aware that something like RICO even exists. I mean, unless you go to law school, or, you know, you're a researcher or an investigative journalist or something, and you dig, most people don't do this naturally. Do you know what I'm saying? They don't have this in their arsenal. So I have a question. Now that you have this information, does this change the way you'll be moving forward with your case? How so?
Mr. Rico Rack is coming to town. He's looking for a few new volunteers.
Well, would you be surprised if I told you I have a prepared 138-page brief that you could possibly look at as a template and fill in the blanks that's already been prepared?
I would think you were an angel from heaven.
Thank you. Angel or devil, depends who you're talking to. It's okay, Mitchell. You can say you love me.
I would just like to say, you know, anybody that's, you know, thinking about doing a podcast, you know, I was a little hesitant. I didn't think, you know, that I could do it myself. But as I found, you know, as we talked and spoke, healing process. I actually feel better now than when we first started. You know, I feel like this is, feels really good to really get this out and hopefully help other parents that are in the same situation, and that it's a form of healing to get it off your chest and talk about it and get it out and know that there are other people out there that are in the same situation as you. When I went through it with my first son, I was truly alone. There was no internet, you know, there was no Facebook. No one knew what the heck parental alienation even was, you know. And now if you get out and meet people that are in the same situation, it really empowers you. And instead of being weak, it gives you strength. And I just want to really say thank you, Archer, and I really appreciate what you've done and the project that you're working on. It really means a lot to me, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you. It means a lot to hear that feedback, because I work really hard on this, and I'm glad. I'm really glad it makes a difference, and I think the fact that, you know, you guys give me such great feedback, that is what keeps me going, because I know this is helping people. And it's like I tell a lot of people, sometimes I'll get an email and they're like, hey, you're putting stuff out there. And I'll quote, I actually got an email that said, stop putting out shit, could attract flies. And no kidding. And you know what I thought to myself? Well, that means you have a perfect life. And that's really great for you. But for the rest of the people that this has come to their doorstep, they need resources and they need help, my friends. Because guess what? You know, nobody thought, you know, what about the people sitting in their home that live by Santa Monica Airport? Next thing you know, you got an airplane in your house. Do you think they were sitting there watching Jerry Springer? And no, I don't think so.
No.
So at some point, emergency service is going to come out. So what's the point? It happens. Nobody thinks any of this is going to touch them until it touches them. And then nobody knows what to do because it's just bizarre.
Yeah, and what people don't understand is this can happen to anybody, anywhere, anywhere in the entire world. What was such a shock to me is this exact same thing is going on in every country. Every country. It's like, scary. It's like you would think that different countries would be running things different, but it's not. It's all being ran the same. And this is, so that tells me that this is not a coincidence, right? This is thought out. To have all, this is like our only common denominator is the way family courts are run.
I keep being asked to bring this project to Canada and the UK. Now, the reason I don't is that I'm not schooled on Canadian law. I'm not schooled on UK law. I know US law. And, you know, we're trying to fund this project. And, you know, and I'm glad you brought up the international thing. Because I think I'm just going to go ahead and do these interview requests that people have requested to go on the podcast from London, the UK, and Canada. I think it might just be refreshing sometimes when you get outside of the donut shop, you know what I mean? And you can kind of see what a larger perspective. And again, if people in the U.S. feel like they're not alone, well, wouldn't the U.S. like to feel like they're not alone? So I'm just going to take any interviews that come in. I'm not going to limit us to the U.S., but here's what I have to tell people from the U.K. and Canada. I cannot assist you in compiling a class action lawsuit outside of the United States. I am not qualified to do that, but so it would just literally be you telling your story, but I would still, before I put you on my podcast, you still have to provide evidence to me, and I would still have to be provided with a number to a legal clinic that I could verify and get counseling with a licensed Canadian attorney or a equivalent of American Bar Association, something. I would not put my credibility out there like that. So don't expect those interviews anytime soon, because you can clearly see to do anything equivalent to this outside of, I mean, I literally have to get schooled on outside law, you know? And I think right now we just need to focus on the U.S., but I am entertaining it, Mitchell.
What gets me is the laws are completely different, but the way that the, I don't know what they're called, DHS or you know, whatever they're called, the Child Protective Services in all the different countries are all doing the same thing by stealing children. The judges, they're working the same way on taking children away from well-bodied, able parents.
Well, here's the thing.
Operating.
I just want to stay focused on the U.S. And I clearly see, I'm fully aware of the four, I think it was over 400 children that were, you know, recovered from a human trafficking ring in Canada. And that whole team up there did an amazing job. And I do believe there was a coordinated effort possibly with our own FBI. And people are doing good work all over, okay? And there's, you know, but I mean, if we were to do that, there's a really nice organization. That I won't call out, but I'll be honest. I mean, they get $50 million a year to operate, to provide investigative services, legal resources, and offer aftercare. So to identify, recover, and offer aftercare and legal services and hold their criminal offenders accountable. They're nonprofit. They're funded by a major organization in the Pacific Northwest. So when I contacted this organization for a grant, they rejected us because at the time we were not sponsored by the World Film Institute, which is a 501c3. So we need to go back to them, of course, which I'm preparing to do. One of the reasons I'm traveling up here is I think at this point I need to have an in-person meeting with someone. But the one interesting thing that came from that is when I found out that that foundation was giving this organization, which is in the, which is operating out of the U.S., yet working in, oh my gosh, I think over 80 countries, but no services available and no field office within the U.S. So what am I traveling up here for? To go knock on the door of that foundation and say, excuse me, I'm literally doing the same work as a U.S.-based organization that has an office in the U.S. and is not providing services within its own country, and therefore I'm working in the U.S., give me a little bit of funding and let us do this, because the organization refused to partner with us. I even offered to open a U.S. office, even to piggyback off their funding. And by their grant terms, they just can't. So I'm like, well, the U.S. is wide open. And if that's a U.S. foundation funding a U.S. organization, then it seems to me like we should be able to get some funding there. You know, we could get paralegals and expand our investigative services. And, you know, we could, you know, I mean, I think this is a business trip worth taking, I guess, is what I'm saying, Mitchell.
Right. I understand fully.
Because imagine.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. Imagine if we could get, you know, $20 million a year to operate this, because what we're dealing with, anytime you deal with law and transcripts, it's just expensive. This isn't cheap by any means. But the cool thing is that if we could get funded, we could go back to that organization, which the reason I'm not naming them is because I think they're doing amazing work and I don't want to knock anybody. They can't help that they're bound by their funding guidelines, period. Okay, it doesn't mean they didn't want to. They couldn't. There's a difference. So we could then go back to them, who have the field offices in Canada and who have the field offices in the UK. And we can now take our cases and I can say, look, I have these, you know, podcast interviews with these stories from Canada, Montreal, London. And then we can start sending our cases off and coordinating services. So, I mean, we kind of got this again, but again, I'm enjoying the journey of developing this humanitarian project with my social venture company. And this is the journey. It's the learning experience. It's trying to develop something. I mean, you know, it's like people who love jigsaw puzzles, right? They love getting it all together. And then when it's done, they're like, oh, I'm kind of sad. It's all over. That was a really fun one. Damn, now I got to start all over again. Right? Or like you. I mean, you developed a good amount of wealth in real estate. And it was that learning process of learning how to get the first house, right? And then after a while, you're like, oh, this is just easy. I can do this over and over again. Like you said, I've developed thousands of properties. But it's never, but it's never the thrill of that learning process, that rise. And I think that process is what creates serial entrepreneurs. Like if you can stick through it and you can get to that learning curve, right? Where I think that's what makes people go, you know, why, like, look at Sir Richard Branson. He has like, what, 500 different companies? Because they like building. You get addicted to the building and seeing something grow, and they want the challenge of stepping outside of real estate or records or media. And that's why you see these people who are, they're into wine and then they step into the app market. I mean, the serial entrepreneur wants to keep growing and learning and seeing other things build, and they want to challenge themselves. It's like, it's a DNA thing. You either got it or you don't.
And if you don't, you can develop it. All it takes is practice.
I agree. Which is why, should we make the announcement about like what we're getting ready to do with your company? Because, you know, we could. It could be exciting.
Sure, I don't mind.
So everybody should know that, excuse me, Mitchell has a solar installation company, and he has partnered with a company called RoarTech. And over the next 30 days or so, we'll be developing a commercial to air at the top of the hour. They've become a sponsor of the Justice Speaks Up podcast. And I'm very proud to say that. And because, as you can hear, we're entrepreneurs, we got that entrepreneur DNA. And one of the objectives of this project is to financially rehabilitate the small business owner, that disenfranchised entrepreneur who was crushed, and provide job opportunities and to financially rehabilitate families so they can defend themselves in court and B, provide for their children when they're returned. And so their company, the two companies that have partnered, are going to be providing job opportunities. And we'll have more on how we're going to be able to assist as a social venture and for-profit company later. But why don't you just give a little tidbit about like what services that are provided and what job opportunity would be available once we get this up and running over the next 30, 45 days?
So my main goal is, after going through this process and seeing how they just completely destroyed me, you know, but yet I'm still capable, you know, if I had work, I would love to work. So my goal is to help all these people and get them jobs that the court is destroying, you know, and also find housing. So my two main goals is to find housing and get these people jobs, because what they're doing is I'm finding they're just putting just like, that's like their main goal. If they crush you and take away your work so you can't afford, you know, anything, and then they take away your home, like they're in the process of doing to me now, you know, and then, so then they make you with no job, and then you're homeless, you know, and you're this, you know, well-bodied, able parent that is a productive American that would, you know, love to work, but you can't because you've just been crushed and thrown from your house. I mean, I'm seeing it over and over, and it has just stimulated me to help in this situation. I have a solar company. I've partnered with an electrical company, and and I just I can train, you know, people to do solar and do electrical work, and that's basically what I have on my plate right now.
And that's a job that men or women, mothers or fathers, can do this work.
Yeah, and so yeah, so this is a, you know, a gender neutral type of work. You know, any woman, any man can do it. You know, but I just see all these, you know, perfectly good people, and you know, they're productive Americans that the court is just destroying it, and the statistics show that what family court is doing is literally lowering our entire production as a nation. I mean, this is huge. They're sucking all the money they can out of us, and yet destroying America at the same time. I don't see how this could, like, even be legally plausible. You know,
didn't we just cover that? It's not allowed. It's the way it's functioning is not allowed.
Yeah, but they do it anyway.
Thus the need for reform, and thus the need for investigative journalism projects such as this to hold our government accountable for its actions and seek them to act in the best interest of the public good, my friend. Well, Mitchell, as always, you're always a gem to speak with, and you always offer valuable information. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how, you know, this company that you're building will flourish, because I'm sure you'll be just as successful with this as you were with raising millions of dollars in real estate. And I'm there for you guys. Any resources I have, and I think we can build something very interesting. And to everybody listening, thank you for tuning in. As always, you guys can contact me with any feedback at justicespeaksup.us. And again, thank you to our sponsors, the World Film Institute. Thank you to Soldier Fit and Good Life of Luxury, and all the artists, musicians, and everyone that we use to express this arts-based journalism project online. We're very grateful for each of you. And hey, share, like these posts, and keep in mind that soon we will be in 104 countries and have a great fundraiser coming out with Rock Rage Radio. We're very thankful for them as well. So until then, everybody take care and keep rising.
This has been brought to you by Drown Rat Productions. Remember, we are everywhere and nowhere.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.